6 seconds left. Halla gets it up top. Marcius over the right. Big shot! Score! Shea Theodore! Vegas takes the lead 4-3! 2.3 to go! Perron to the circle. He shoots and scores! David Perron wins it! Up top for Kopitar. Feet to the right. Shot! Stopped by Fleury!
Shea Theodore is fourth and a huge hit by McNabb. He leveled Arvidsson. Wow.
Here's Howell into the zone. Howell left side, drop pass, big shot, score! That's John Merrill! Merrill puts Vegas on top 2-1!
And welcome in Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a Monday. Getting the week started out right after a pretty good weekend of hockey. USA versus Canada. It was good times, not just in the pro ranks, but over at the Paralympics. Clayton Hamilton along with Frank Harnish getting ready to enjoy the last home game before the quick little road trip and then four more before the end of the season.
Not only that, but we're talking about the hockey, and obviously we're going to get into the Golden Knights, but what a great goal by in the women's championship for the NCAA as well by Elizabeth Jaguar. Beautiful move, SportsCenter top play. I mean, that was a beautiful goal there as Clarkson. I didn't even know Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
They've won back-to-back women's championships in three in the last 5 years.
And they are the Clarkson Golden Knights.
So the Golden Knights have already won one championship this year. Could it be a foreshadowing of what could be down the road?
And let's not forget, William Carlson was a throw-in for the Golden Knights to take David Clarkson.
That is correct.
Oh, yeah. Look at all this. It's all going in the 30 for 30.
It's all going. It's all going in the 30 for 30. And you know, Frank.
Yes, sir.
It seems as if whenever the Golden Knights get together with the Calgary Flames, it has international implications, not just the NHL, U.S. versus Canada, but on the Olympic level. Last time they were in town, Team USA's women in the Olympics went all the way to the shootouts to dispel Canada and get the gold medal. And yesterday, prior to the Calgary Flames coming to T-Mobile again, USA and Canada squared off in sled hockey at the Paralympics from Pyeongchang. It went to overtime when this happened.
Farmer on the puck has been out there for 3.5 minutes now to start this overtime.
Farmer! Oh, he's got it! That's why he's on the ice! That's why he is the prominent man for the United States! And he is the match winner. He is the gold medal winner. And oh my goodness me, what a finale. Gold medal number 4 for the United States of America in para ice hockey. And their grit and their dominance of this sport just gets tighter and firmer.
And that was how USA did it in overtime, beating Canada, getting the Paralympic gold medal in sled hockey. So good on you, Team USA.
Yeah, and a nice final there after the USA was basically crushing teams, winning 10-0 games against Japan, the Czech Republic, just destroying everybody out there. But Canada came to play, but the USA gets it done. And good in the Winter Olympics, good in the Paralympics, good for them.
Good for them and good for the Golden Knights. They beat Calgary for a third time. Second time here at T-Mobile. 4-0. All Golden Knights. All William Carlson. All Marc-Andre Fleury. What a game.
Oh, what a game for sure. And when we're talking about all in the MVPs of the game and everything, of course, the big player of the game, which we're going to get to in a minute, was a guy who's had some criticism on the social media world.
There certainly has been some criticism of that fella. But we have a huge show today, so stick with us. We've got the MJ Christensen giveaway that's going to be coupled today, Frank, with a pair of Vancouver Canucks tickets. So you're going to get the $50 gift card and 2 tickets to tomorrow night's game.
That's right. And, you know, only 5 home games left on the season tomorrow night. Then they have a couple on the road, big games on the road. And then they come back, which could be a prelude of what's going to happen in the playoffs, because the first home game in that final 4-game homestand, the Colorado Avalanche, who right now would be Vegas's first-round opponent.
And then we're going to talk to Keith Gave, who wrote the book The Russian Five, which is about the five Russian players that came over from the old Soviet Red Army team, ended up playing for the Red Wings and winning the Stanley Cup. It's about their journey of how they got out of the Soviet Union and were able to come to the U.S. Keith Gave, he worked for the State Department, for the NSA. He was a translator for the U.S. Army and then a sports writer for the Detroit Free Press. And some of the stories that he's going to have how these guys got out of the Soviet Union to come play in Detroit is spectacular.
Yeah, and something tells me that we might have to have this gentleman back even after today, because he also wrote for the Dallas Morning News and took quite a bit of flack down in Dallas when a certain goal that they scored by a Mr. Hall helped them win a Stanley Cup, and he questioned whether or not the goal should have counted. So in Dallas, he wasn't necessarily the most popular guy in the world.
That's right. And if that's not enough, if you don't win the $50 gift card that is coupled with the Vancouver Canucks tickets, that's okay, because we have more Vancouver Canucks tickets to give away today. So two ticket giveaways. Stick with us for the whole show.
Yeah, it's a big time and a big win last night. Well, actually yesterday afternoon for the Vegas Golden Knights taking on Calgary. And I got to say this. The Calgary fans were very gracious. They seemed like they were having a good time. I almost felt sorry for them, because they are literally watching their team melt down in front of their eyes. Mike Smith has not been the goalie that he was before the injury. He gave up 6 goals the game before, 4 yesterday against the Vegas Golden Knights. If they're going to make the playoffs, everybody figures it's got to be on the back of Smith. He's not in that form right now, and they are running out of time to try to make the playoffs. I was looking at one of the different prediction sites and that kind of stuff for teams in the playoffs. Right now, they're giving the Calgary Flames a 3.7% opportunity or chance of making the playoffs as a wild card team.
Yeah, they've got a lot of room to make up, need some help in front of them, don't have a ton of games. They're going to play tonight. After they get done with tonight, just 8 more games when most folks are playing 10. So it's a tough time to be behind with less games.
Yeah, and even though you look and you go, oh, well, they're playing Arizona tonight. Arizona's actually been playing some pretty decent hockey lately. And Calgary, Tkachuk still won't be there. Like we said, Smith isn't playing that well. And I don't care who you're playing. When you're coming off a game where you score 0, no matter how good the goalie is, you can't win when you score 0.
Right, and they put an awful lot of shots on net, had some pretty good scoring opportunities in the first period, but couldn't crack through. And it seemed like one of those games that we have seen the Knights sleepwalk a bit early, and it certainly looked like they were sleepwalking yesterday.
Well, it certainly seemed that Calgary came out like a team with their backs against the wall that were trying to do everything. 20 shots on goal in the first period, but not great scoring chances. Vegas, although they gave up way too many shots on goal, Marc-Andre Fleury was on his A game. He didn't have to make a bunch of spectacular saves, although he made a beautiful behind-the-back save later on in the game in the third period that was absolutely incredible. If you get a chance, Google that and check it out. But 20 shots is too many, but the defenseman did keep the crease fairly clean. He didn't have a lot of traffic in front of him, and Calgary just seemed to get more and more frustrated as the game went on.
They certainly did, and the Knights needed something to wake them up, and enter the man who has been at the center of all of the controversy since joining the team about how he is going to fit in. Why is this guy here? What is he going to do to help this team? We found out yesterday when Ryan Reeves introduced himself to TJ Brody. He arrived with bad intentions and blew him up, Frank.
Oh, he absolutely blew him up. And the thing about it is, that's amazing about it, and Gerard Gallant talked about it after the game, and some of the other players mentioned it after the game, the man that woke up the team is the man that's more known for putting other guys to sleep.
Yeah, and he really got the right end of TJ Brody, knocked him out. It was a spectacular open ice hit. And Ryan Reeves, he is our play of the game. The play of the game is brought to you by Best Mattress. Best Mattress, best service, best selection, best price guaranteed. Ryan Reeves.
Brody trying to move it. He got steamrolled over by Reeves. And now Hamonic with a shove on Reeves. And Brody run over by Reeves behind the Calgary net.
Oh, big hit by Ryan Reeves in on the forecheck. Good job by Reeves, just maintains here, nothing going on.
And Ryan Reeves, with the statement hit, he did not get a penalty. He got a little bit of an unsportsmanlike that was a coincidental minor, so it took him off the ice, but he took a player with him, didn't put the Golden Knights a man down, but he woke up the bench. He woke up the building with that hit.
Yeah, he woke up the building. He also sent a message to Calgary. And I don't know about you, but when I saw that hit, a couple of things went through my mind. First off, the game against L.A., when he got a penalty for a hit that was also a clean hit, but he basically got penalized for being bigger and stronger than the L.A. King player. He did the same thing here in this game. But now that we're getting ready for the playoffs, and the referees are also getting ready for the playoffs, and you see the physicality and stuff go, what did Reeves say after that game? That's not going to be a penalty in the playoffs. That actually shouldn't have been a penalty here tonight. I'm not going to change the way I play. He didn't leave his feet. He didn't take a cheap shot. He didn't lead with an elbow or a shoulder or anything. He lined Brody up. Brody was coming around. He saw him coming and just couldn't stop it. And Reeves, just because he is bigger and stronger, just absolutely laid him out. And even worse news for Calgary Flame fans, Brody left the ice shortly after that. He did not return to the game. Haven't heard a report on his status for tonight in Arizona, so who knows if he's injured or what's going on with him as well. But Reeves talked about that. The same hit that everybody was lighting him up on social media for, he did last night, and it lit the fire. And you could say, and that's why we made it our play of the game, was one of the big reasons, if not the big reason, that Vegas won that game. Because not only did it light up the team, but like you said, when he got the coincidental minors, generally, when Vegas has 4-on-4 hockey, it's advantage Golden Knights.
It is, because they are stronger. They are faster than most teams. And that 4-on-4 led directly to the Dougie Hamilton, a two-minute tripping, put the Golden Knights on the power play where Colin Miller cashed in, gave the first goal and the lead.
Yeah, absolutely. And Colin Miller there, and that was kind of a weird goal. It was deflected, not by a Vegas Golden Knight, so it was Colin Miller's goal. But Smith kind of didn't have a chance on that one. But once he got that first one passed, then all of a sudden he didn't play nearly as well. That second period was incredible because they had four goals. They only had eight shots.
They only had eight shots, and Colin Miller gets the game winner. You can certainly say that Marc-Andre Fleury, with all the shots that he saw, particularly early, really helped them solidify and win this game. But when it comes to the player of the game, you can't get past William Karlsson and his natural hat trick. He is our player of the game, the player of the game brought to you by Brankus Team Realty. Your home sold, guaranteed. William Karlsson.
Vegas back into 1-1. Neal to the right. Karlsson scores! Goal 37 for William Karlsson. 2-0 Knights. Two goals in less than a minute. Here's Marchessault behind the net. Left wing shot. Score! It's another for Karlsson. 3-0 Vegas with 7 minutes to go in the second period. Knights coming towards center. Here comes Karlsson ahead with Schmidt, 2-on-1. Karlsson on the right. He waits. He shoots. He scores! Hat-trick Karlsson!
And William Karlsson with the three goals. He almost had an assist with Marchessault, almost a four-point game. But, boy, was it good to see him back on the score sheet, see that smile, and see all them hats rain down on the ice.
And although most people are going to think, well, yeah, William Karlsson, he's already in the record book for the first hat-trick for the Golden Knights, but that was also a record. Because he's now also in the record book for the first natural hat trick, was scoring all three in the same period last night or yesterday afternoon for the Vegas Golden Knights. So Wild Bill just getting the job done there, getting hat tricks, scoring goals all over. And he's still in the running for the Rocket Richard for the most goals. He'd have some catching up to do, and he might need another hat trick or two if he's going to get there. But he's not that far behind guys by the name of Ovechkin and Laine, so he's in pretty rarefied air right now when it comes to goal scoring.
It's great to see that, William Karlsson said, to see all those hats come down. We also saw yesterday, Frank, after the first goal, after the Colin Miller goal, we saw the plastic pink flamingo make its way onto the ice after the goal. What are your thoughts on the plastic pink flamingo? Is it something that could reach rat status or octopus status or catfish status, the pink flamingo?
I don't have a lot of thoughts on it. I'm not a big fan of it, but if that's what people gravitate towards and want to do it, I guess it'd be all right. I'm not a big proponent of throwing stuff on the ice, period.
Now, our own Chris Chapman was a fan of the pink flamingo, were you not?
Oh, I love it. And for those who don't know, my cell phone case actually has
the pink flamingo.
The pink flamingo on it. I really enjoy the flamingo. I think it's a cool bird. I think it's fantastic. When I had lawn, I actually had pink lawn flamingos on my front lawn, much to the chagrin of my ex-wife. Probably why she's now my ex-wife. But I like the flamingo. I mean, I don't know if it's going to stick. But if there's something that's going to stick, I hope it's that.
It's better than the poker chip idea because you could miss one.
Poker chips are absolutely
poker
stupid.
Poker chips is the terrible idea because you can easily miss one and cause mayhem later.
That could end a guy's career.
It could end a guy's career.
Literally.
I don't think
poker chips is absolutely stupid. Do not throw poker chips on the
fuzzy
ice.
Dice.
The showgirl feather is hard to get over the boards. I mean, if you're too
they
far away,
fly very well.
Unless it's
fly
attached to the showgirl.
Right. So, yeah, we're looking fuzzy dice right now or pink flamingo.
Oh, pink flamingo. Yes,
so,
that's awesome.
Not I mean, too I imagine far? Fuzzy dice are easier to smuggle in
yeah.
than the pink flamingo. I don't know.
Did the flamingo have the little...
Yes,
metal
it had. It had so yes on the thing. That's oh. I didn't know what it was until the guy came out. The guy from the ice crew came out and he picked it up. And he picked it out by the metal little stanchions that you put into the grass. And then I was like, oh, that's a pink flamingo.
See, now I would think that is not going to be the thing. Then if it actually had that in there, because I would think security would do a better job and make sure because that could be a weapon.
That could be.
I mean, with everything that's going on today, I don't think they're going to let those in on a gigantic level.
That could be.
Maybe they were plastic, though. Maybe they look metal,
yeah,
but they were
be.
Actually plastic.
I mean,
that
was pretty far
away.
You
can still stab somebody with plastic. You can still, you can still, as your mother used to tell you, put an eye out with that thing.
I'm as high as you can get in there and not be at the club in terms of where I'm standing. And so I was pretty far away.
Well, I'm basically behind Pinks watching the game, so I really didn't even see the flamingo.
That's true. But, yeah, it was only one of them. It was a lone flamingo. So we will see.
You know, flamingos are actually pretty dirty, nasty birds.
If that catches on. I do think about South Florida when I think of flamingos, except for the flamingo in Flamingo.
I literally saw a thing once on Animal Planet, and they're pretty nasty and smelly, just dirty birds. I mean, they might look nice as a lawn ornament. I don't know that you'd want a bunch of them around in your
pond.
Well,
yeah, and they get the color from all the shrimp that they eat. They kind of turn pink.
I think most birds are unclean.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about them because they mess on my car all the time.
All right. So
I don't think it's flamingos that do that to your car.
So we're 50,
I'm just saying birds in general.
We're 50-50 on the flamingo.
There's three of us. How can we be 50-50?
Well, I'm just saying between you guys. I don't get a vote. I just drive the bus.
You're
that's
the
all,
deciding vote.
That's all.
You're the
that's
deciding
all,
vote.
That's all
you
I
like
do.
It? That's fine.
I have to decide. You're my partner, Frank, so I have to decide with you.
I don't think it's really up to us. I don't believe security is going to let that happen.
That's true. We are not the keepers of tradition.
A little rubber rat you can bring in. Something on a big scale. I think they might have a problem with it.
I think you have a point. You have a point. But you never know. Like, how do people get a catfish in? So, I don't know.
But you know, when they played the Red Wings here in that October game, there were octopi that were thrown down onto the ice, which was very disappointing. But it you know, as a guy who had never seen that, it was actually kind of cool to see.
Right. Well, as a member of the original 31 teams. We do have some time, Frank, to figure out our traditions. We don't have to set them in stone right now.
Right, just like
after
everybody
game
wants,
number 72.
Yeah, just like everybody wants to know who the rival is. Rivals happen in the playoffs. Let's get there first.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But somebody who will know about the octopi and all the things on the ice will be our next guest.
Yeah, Keith Gave going to be with us on the other side of the break, and I cannot wait to talk to this guy. He said he worked for the NSA. He worked for the Army as a translator. He wrote for the Detroit Free Press. He followed around the Russian Five, and some of the stories that he's got about these guys and how they were able to get them out is spectacular. And I've seen the 30 for 30 of Miracles and Men that was about members of that team that lost in 1980. And I saw the Red Army documentary came out in 2014, won documentary awards at the New York Film Festival, at Sundance, at Cannes. All spectacular, and it's going to be great. I can't wait to get to him.
I can't either. I actually saw the Red Army team play against the Chicago Blackhawks many years ago at the old Chicago Stadium. And I have to tell you, when you saw them, they were so regimented and so precise and everything. When they changed lines, it always really did look like the same lines. They had a system, and that's what they went with.
Yeah, it's going to be spectacular. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to get to that right after the break. But before we can do that, though, we got some stuff to give away. Want to give away some stuff?
Winner, winner, but not a pink flamingo dinner.
Right. I don't know. I wonder how the pink flamingo tastes.
I don't think
you're allowed to eat them, but there's a lot of them. I don't think you're allowed to eat them. But whenever the Vegas Golden Knights win, you win too. So make sure you listen to Fox Sports Radio right here, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, after every Golden Knights win for your chance at a $50 gift card to MJ Christensen Diamond Jewelers. And we are going to couple that today only with two tickets to the Vancouver game tomorrow night. That is a 7 o'clock start, so we will have the pregame at 6:30, 7 o'clock, a puck drop. 702-876-1340, 702-876-1340. And in honor of William Karlsson and his 39 goals, caller number 39, you are going to the game. 702-876-1340. Stick with us right here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Keith Gave, the Russian Five, up next.
A roaring Joe Louis for two members of the former Soviet Red Army team. Former, they are now Detroit Red Wings.
All the way, baby. Sergei Fedorov said it best. It means everything.
And welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Congratulations to Daniel winning those tickets to the Vancouver game. And we will have more tickets coming up later for tomorrow night's game. And I don't want to waste any more time, Frank. I want to get this guy ready and rolling. I'm so excited to talk to him. Keith Gave, author of The Russian Five, A Story of Espionage, Defection, Bribery, and Courage, is kind enough to give us a couple of moments to talk about his book, which I believe hits shelves tomorrow. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you, gentlemen. How are you doing?
We're doing well. And yourself?
Good. I'm good. And I got to tell you, playing that the celebration at Joe Louis Arena, it sounded like the 97 celebration when Igor Larionov and Slava Tisov were parading the cup around the ice at Joe Louis. One of the special moments of my career, and a lot of pretty good moments, but that was a big one. That was something.
Now, did you feel that you were part of that celebration as well, since you were so influential and so involved in the whole Russian Five thing and basically opening up Russia to the NHL?
You know, I want to be real careful here. Absolutely not. I didn't feel like I was part of it. You know, I was a sports writer, working pretty hard for my newspaper, the Detroit Free Press, trying to cover that team as honestly as possible. I did the Wings a little bit of a favor. It's in the book about because I was a Russian speaker. I was a linguist in the Army for 6 years, working for the NSA. That's where I learned the language. And because I knew the language, and because the Red Wings were drafting Russian players from behind the Iron Curtain, Soviet Red Army players, they needed somebody to make a contact, a very first contact, the most important contact of all. I let them know that, yes, the Wings had drafted them. They want them to come over here. They'll do everything they can to help them escape or defect and get over here and play hockey in Detroit for the Red Wings. I did that. By the way, they offered me a lot of money, which I did not take. I didn't take a dime from them. I paid my own expenses and everything. But I went over there and I passed along a message on the condition that when these guys came over here, when they got here, I wanted to be the first to know about it for the readers of my newspaper. I wanted to be the first to interview them. I want exclusivity, the first to all the news, all the scoops, whatever. The Wings lived up to that. You know, I did them a favor. They paid me back by letting me interview, letting me know that Sergei Fedorov had defected from the Goodwill Games out of Portland, Oregon in 1990, a year later when Vladimir Konstantinov came over here, and a year later when Slava Kozlov came over. I got first dibs on all those stories and all those interviews. So, they had the deal was done. They'd paid me back. I was just trying to do an honest job covering the Detroit Red Wings. I was a little bit closer to the Russian Five, obviously, because I spoke the language. I had a good relationship with those guys and so on. But no, that wasn't my celebration. That was theirs. I just covered it for my newspaper.
When you sort of look back on how all of this started, Slava Fetisov was really sort of the architect or the guy that has gotten the most amount of notoriety, or people know his story probably a little bit better than the others. He was a part of the 30 for 30 that ESPN did of Miracles mm-hmm. and Men. He was part of the Red Army documentary film in 2014. But some of the other guys had even more interesting stories than him, correct?
Well, yes, and I think, you know, I agree that Slava Vatisov had a huge role in helping to kind of kick down the Iron Curtain, standing up to the Soviet regime that still kept the iron fist over the hockey team even a year or two or three after Perestroika, when the Berlin Wall fell and the Iron Curtain fell, and the Russian citizens were allowed to travel pretty much wherever they wanted to go. Hockey players couldn't do that. They still kept those guys pretty well sequestered, and made it really impossible for these guys to move around much. But it's not just Slava Vatisov. He gets a lot of credit, but a guy who gets equally as amount of credit is Igor Larionov. The two of them were teammates on the Green Line, that famous five-man unit that won a lot of gold and silver themselves, and world championships and Olympic gold medals and so on. But Igor Larionov was just as important to that process as Slava Vatisov was. Igor doesn't quite get enough credit. I don't know why that is. If you noticed, he wasn't much a part of that Red Army movie or the 30 for 30 that ESPN did. And frankly, he should have been, because he deserves it just as much credit.
I wonder if maybe you can shed some light on this. When all these guys were trying to figure out what moves they were going to make and how they were going to individually get to the United States, was it one of those things where they kind of hid all of that to themselves? Did they share a lot of information with the other players that were trying to get here to work collectively, or was it all secret hush-hush individual?
Oh, it was all secret hush-hush. These guys... You know, in the Soviet Union, nobody trusted anybody else. You had to be very, very, very careful with whom you trusted your innermost secrets and desires. The people were just guarded. Sergei Fedorov didn't even tell his parents, what he was thinking, and that the Red Wings were courting him, or he didn't tell his parents as much as he knew, the one guy who defected before Sergei Fedorov, the year before Alexander McGillney defected to Buffalo, Alex and Sergei Fedorov were very, very, very good friends, roommates, real close, played on the same line, fabulous young hockey players in the Soviet Union, and the day before Alexander McGillney defected out of Sweden, Stockholm, Sweden, where they just won the world championships. He went for a walk in a park with Sergei and basically said, "Sergei, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm going to North America. I'm going to Buffalo, and I'm going to play hockey in the NHL. You should come with me." That was the first that Sergei Fedorov had ever heard about this. And, Sergei says, "Oh, man, I can't go. What about my mother, my father, my brother? He was worried about putting them in a precarious position, as a player could do with his family if he defected. Sergei did not go, but that's the first time that Sergei Fedorov had heard anything at all about Alex McGillney leaving, was the day before he left. I mean, these guys don't talk about that stuff with one another, or they didn't then.
Keith Gave, the author of The Russian Five, also fine writer for the Detroit Free Press and Dallas Morning News, amongst other things, joining us here at Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Keith, when it came to these guys coming over here, and you mentioned that they didn't do it collectively, they did it kind of individually, as another player would defect and come over, was it more difficult then for other players following them because they were watching the players even closer, or did it kind of open it up and make it easier because it could have gone either way, I guess?
Yeah, I think... It started with Glasnost and Perestroika when Gorbachev was taking the wall down and opened things up a little bit. And as I said, they sequestered the players. They watched the players a little bit more closely. But that was, 89 when the wall, Berlin Wall, came down. By then, Vatisov and Larionov had pushed the Soviet authorities who ran the hockey program to the point that, here's the deal, we're going to go in this world championship for you, but we want to finally be able to go to North America and play hockey with the teams that drafted us. Enough with the promises. These guys have been promised since the early to mid-'80s that they would be able to go over someday. Well, now they're in their early 30s, they're to mid-30s, and their career is passing them by. They want to play in the best league in the world, and they finally pushed and pushed and pushed and made a deal. The older guys got released, and they were watching the younger guys a lot more carefully, but when McGillney came and then Fedorov, they're trying to watch players, but the Soviet Union is crumbling. Money is disappearing. Resources are disappearing. They're trying to keep together their own hockey program, their own little dynasty there, and it got more and more difficult to watch players while they were trying to run their own hockey organization. And by the time Slava Kozlov came over, the third guy, it was wide open. The players were able to come and go, and most of them came over. There was a huge exodus of players in 92, 93, 94. As a matter of fact, in 1994, during the first NHL lockout, Fetisov and Larionov got a group of players and Russian NHL stars and took them back to Russia to play a series of games over there during the lockout in the fall of 94. I went over there for that and spent about 3 weeks chasing those guys around, watching fans enjoy having their hockey stars back on the ice, even though they were now playing in the NHL.
When it all began and it was all being under a secret cloak and dagger type stuff and things like that, what kind of repercussions or threats were made against the families of these people when they did come over? Because we hear about stuff that maybe the government or somebody said, if you leave, your wife, your family, your kids, your this or that might have something done to them. Was that kind of stuff a reality?
Oh, that was the big concern. And it was a reality in some cases. The Russians, the Soviets didn't treat their citizens very well in the best of times. What are they going to do? We like to think over here that they were going to cause bodily harm and so on to family members left behind. None of that stuff went on. But the players themselves who defected were concerned about the parents losing jobs, coaches losing the fathers who were coaches losing their jobs. Some of the benefits that they enjoyed would be taken away. In the case of Igor Larionov, who stood up to the regime and wrote a 7,500-word essay in a sporting magazine called Agonyok, that was really the first volley that the Russian players started throwing at the Tikhonov regime that ran the hockey program. When he did that, he was actually exiled from his team, couldn't make any trips, and his parents lost some privileges that they had. There were repercussions. I don't think they were horrible, the kinds that we imagine. I don't think those things happened. But I don't know all those players either. I know the Detroit players, the three younger ones who came over, not a lot happened to those three guys, to their families, when they came over here.
Keith Gave joining us, author of The Russian Five, A Story of Espionage, Defection, Bribery, and Courage, also a writer for the Detroit Free Press. And Keith, we saw a lot of wonder with the first players that came over and what was going to happen, like you said, with their families. But there was also that second wave that came over in the 2000s, and there were a lot of reports about Russian mob and folks extorting a lot of their salaries. Were you able to follow that? Was that a reality? Was that a propaganda issue? What really happened in that phase of the story?
Oh, no, that was real serious business, and it happened really with, not so much the older guys who came over here in 89 and 90, but the wave of Sergei Fedorovs, Pavel Bure. Pavel Bure had some real serious problems. I think McGillney might have as well. Some of these younger Russian players that came over in the early 90s faced a lot of that stuff, and it was not so much the government who was leaning on the families back there, but the Russian mafia who were, kidnapping or attempted kidnapping or threatening to kidnap family members and so on, who were extorting money from these players who suddenly, they were making $300 a month when they played professional hockey in the Soviet Union, and now they're making millions of dollars with real good contracts in the NHL. these guys were being extorted, some of these guys, by some real bad actors back home in the former Soviet Union. So, you know, that was real, real serious stuff. I didn't hear a lot about it in the second wave that came over, the Pavel Datsyuks and so on that came over in the early 2000s. I didn't hear a lot of that, but that's not to say it wasn't going on.
Are there any players that you're aware of that maybe wanted to come over and things didn't work out, or for some reason through threats or whatever else that they weren't able to make it over here to the United States?
You know, I don't think so. I think most of the guys who came over here, you know, wanted to come over here did. A lot of guys, not a lot, but some of them found the NHL not to their liking. I mean, one of the great five-man unit that Fetisov and Lirianov played on, Lirianov, the centerman, his left winger was Vladimir Krutov, and Krutov played one season in the NHL and didn't really care for it that much. He was a pure goal scorer in Russia, playing over there, but he struggled a lot, and struggled a lot with not only on the ice with the way that the game was played in the NHL, but also the lifestyle in North America. And he wound up going back after a year. Not all of them stayed. And, you know, as much as we like our way of life over here, it was a shock to the system of a lot of these guys who came over, and not many of a few of them wound up going back much earlier than they anticipated.
When it comes to the Russian invasion, the Russian Five, and all the players that are coming over here, do you think it was the talent of the players that came over here that changed the game the most, or just the style of play and everything? Because the impact on the NHL and hockey all over the world is dramatically different than it was before this happened.
You're absolutely right about that. And it was both. It was both of those. It was the talent that they had, you know, the fundamentals that they came over here with. And this is true in not just in Russia, but in Sweden, Finland, Czechoslovakia, the way the game is coached over there is far different than the way it's coached over here. We're starting to catch up in North America the way we coach the game. But you know, even from the littlest guys on, you know, the emphasis on winning, you know, hitting and checking and up and down our wings and playing a North American game, but emphasis on winning. Emphasis is not on winning at all in Europe. The game is just taught differently. You see kids on the ice, 10-year-old kids, for instance, in North America, it's one puck on the ice, and we're fighting over it, and we're trying to, you know, score goals and do everything. In Russia, Sweden, Finland, and so on, there might be 100 pucks on the ice. Every player's got one or two pucks that they're playing with. They skate around pylons. They work on fundamentals all the time. And then when they do start playing, they typically play in five-man units, especially in Russia, and you know, they play together so much that the style of play is so different. You know, it's not just dump and chase and hack and whack and, you know, dump the puck in and chase it behind the net and hope that you can regain possession. These guys will, as you're well aware, it's a puck possession game that they play. They play keep away with the puck, and when you got five guys who know where the other four are all the time, and those four guys know where the open ice is, the game gets a little easier. And you talk to North Americans, really good North American players like Hall of Famers like Brendan Shanahan and Steve Yzerman and Nick Lidstrom and so on. Talk to those guys about playing against the Russian Five at a typical practice at Joe Louis Arena when those guys came over here, and it was no fun at all. They complained, you know, having to be, you know, on the ice for a 45-second shift and never touch the puck. That's what the Detroit Red Wings MO was when these five guys came over. The Russian Five, it spread around to the rest of the team in Detroit, and suddenly nobody liked to play the Detroit Red Wings because they didn't have the puck. They couldn't get the puck ever. And everybody for the last 20-plus years now has been emulating that game, and we're starting to see more and more and more of that. They've changed the way the game is played in North America, and frankly, it's a much better game than it used to be.
Keith, I knew this was going to happen, that we were going to run out of time with you with so much more to cover. Can we get you back? Are you free tomorrow? Can you continue this story with us?
I really want to, and I will. I'll do anything I can to help out. I can't wait to talk to you guys. You guys have the best story in hockey right now. You know that, right?
Yeah, we do.
I mean, what's going on with the Golden Knights my buddy Gerard Gallant, who's doing such a great job coaching the team. George McPhee, the team he built. You guys got something special up there, and I really would like to talk about that.
Yeah, we got a lot more to get to you. Frank will get together with you after the show. We'll get you back on because I want to get into the Red Wing portion of this and how they came together and what that meant for the organization. So much more to get to. But anybody whose appetite was wet, the Russian Five: A Story of Espionage, Defection, Bribery, Courage. It's all available in all of the usual outlets. Correct? Amazon, bookstores, whatnot.
Absolutely. It's bookstores, certainly all of Michigan's online. It's available online everywhere now. Every place you can order a book, you can get this book now.
All right, excellent. So Keith gave The Russian Five, A Story of Espionage, Defection, Bribery, and Courage. We will get with you off-air, Keith, get you back on the show because there's so much more to get to with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right. I can't wait to get him back, Frank.
Got to do it same Golden Knight time, same Golden Knight channel.
Same thing. It's going to be spectacular. I cannot wait. But those of you that do want to see some professional hockey, we do have those other tickets. We're going to give them away right now. This is for tomorrow night's game against Vancouver, 7 o'clock start, 702-876-1340, 702-876-1340, caller number 19. You are going to the game tomorrow night. Stick with us right here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. We have a story of politics and hockey colliding. We just heard more of it. We're going to hear more on the other side. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey. And welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Congratulations to Daniel and to Mark winning those tickets. You guys are going to the Vancouver Canucks game tomorrow. And Frank, the people have spoken. Mark says he likes the pink flamingo. Daniel says he doesn't like it, but if it becomes a thing, he will like it. So a small sample size, but the people have spoken.
But Diana Front also said she does not like it either at our reception desk.
So we're right back where we started.
So there we go. So
hey, you know, Frank, we talked a lot today about politics and hockey colliding. And there's another story in the great state of Washington where two such things have met. And am I to understand that Washington Governor Jay Inslee may have said something and people cannot figure out whether or not it is true? Is that possible? Can a politician say something and then us not know if it's true or not?
Well, first off, I usually assume that whatever a politician says isn't true. But that being said, that's just me, not Lotus Broadcasting or anybody else. But maybe Jay Inslee did let something slip the other day. He might have revealed the name of the new Seattle hockey team, even though they haven't officially been named an NHL team, when he said, "We cannot wait to get on a high-speed rail line to come up and have the greatest hockey rivalry in North America, which is the Seattle Totems versus the Vancouver Canucks." Now, it should be pointed out that he was born in 1951, and the Seattle Totems played in the Western Hockey League from 58 to 75, so he might have just been channeling what he saw as a youngster, but he may have also revealed that the Totems will indeed be the name of the NHL team in Seattle.
That is such a dumb name, but there's a part of me that wants Seattle to have a dumb name.
I agree with you. I think it is a dumb name.
Yeah, no, this should go with the Kraken. Kraken is good.
I like Kraken.
I do too. I like the Kraken. You know what else I like? I like the T.C. Martin. T.C. Martin Show. It's up next.
I like that we have Keith Gave on again tomorrow.
Yeah, I would like to have him on tomorrow too. Stay tuned. We'll tweet that out if we get it. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next.